So, a very good day to everybody. It is the 11th of February, 2022. On the mountains, we've got a nice, clear definition. It's been quite cold overnight. In actual fact, we went down to about 4 degrees, which for us is pretty cold. So, just to put you in the picture as to what we're doing, I'm going to get in the car, go down to the airport and fly around about 2.5 hours, and we should get near Warrington, not that far from Liverpool in the United Kingdom, obviously in England. So first of all, let me welcome Treflin. So Treflin Jones, a very warm welcome to you. How are you? Tell us a little bit about your weather and then we'll get cracking on what we're going to talk about.
Good morning, Vince. Good morning, everybody who's listening. Yeah, I'm here in Warrington this morning, and I haven't yet looked out the window, so let me roll the blinds up. Let me just see what's happening out here. I mean, as you can appreciate, the weather here is not going to be anything like it is out there. But we've got grey skies with blue shining through. It looks as if it might be a pleasant day. Let's use the word pleasant.
Yeah.
The ground is wet, so we've had some rain overnight. So the gardens have been watered, but the weather's getting better now as we head over towards spring. So it's just a typical British weather, but it's going to be a nice day, let's call it that.
Okay, now Treflin, we've got some very important things to talk about today, and I'm going to probably give you a couple of angles that we've not discussed, because basically when we met many years ago, so we're talking around the year 2005, I think, when we first met.
Correct.
And there was nothing to suggest to me anything at all about your weight at the time. I don't remember you then as a big guy, but you've had a sort of journey from many, many stones which have suddenly disappeared, or do I dare say suddenly? It's obviously in between our visits that have disappeared, but they've been packed on before that. So when we met in 2005, what weight would you have been?
Okay, I wasn't weight conscious then. I would have probably been about 14, so maybe 15 stone. Let's put it that way, like about 15 stone.
Okay, and then in between that time, so we'll give a mark around 2005, because that's when we met. Then when did the weight really go on? What was the heaviest and when was that?
Well, I realized that I was getting heavier, but I was also getting older as well. And as you get older, you slow down. And as I was getting heavier, I was slowing down even more. And I'd always had a tendency to put on weight because my mother was big in terms of being fat. Let's use that word. Let's not be PC about this, you know.
Okay.
My mother was fat. My sister was fat. My father was slight. And my brother was slight. But I inherited the fat gene, if I can use such a term. So, you know, I became 20 stone 5. And in 2019... I realized that this was not a good place to be. Yeah, I was 73 then, and I thought, you know, I want to live as long as I can, and I want to live the best life that I can. And I realized, and I looked in the mirror, and I thought, somebody's done this to me. And I looked in the mirror, and I said, you know, who's done this to me? And I had a chat, I had a good word with myself. And the answer came back, and you know, well, you did it. You did this to you. You know, so it's like going out one morning, and your car's battered, you know, and the windscreen's smashed and the tyres are flat, and you stand there and you're saying, who's done that? And then you said, well, I did it. You know, I've neglected my car. But you don't neglect your car. You know, you polish it, you clean it, you take it for a service, but we neglect our bodies. I mean, are we stupid or what? You know, so you clean your house, but you don't clean your body.
Okay.
You get in the shower, but that's the outside, you know. But
okay, now this is interesting, because basically we're coming to a point where we both see things very clearly, but we were seeing things very differently from a starting point. Now, what I want to push you a little bit on, because we know that we've got references to the remedy and how you've attacked it, And I've got references for myself, obviously, through my own experience of what I did. Now, the first thing I will tell you is that there's no way I ever got near your weight. And so that begs a question, really, of what was going on in your life to allow you not to see the weight that you were packing on? Because obviously, if everybody starts from the same point, then we're not really discussing something that other people can't quickly access for the information. Whereas you've got one story, I've got a very different picture, but we were both interested in doing the same thing, which was controlling our weight, our appearance, our lifestyle, our experience of life, and how other people around us were also having to live their lives within what we were doing. So if you go back to that point when you were gradually packing on the pounds, why were you packing on so much weight? What was going on in your life?
Well, you know, I said earlier, I've always had a tendency to put on weight. So I had been fat before. I've never been 20 stone 5, but I've been about 17 stone and managed to shed weight. So all through my life, I was trying to shed weight, but I didn't understand what was making me fat. I knew it was what was going into my mouth. And I'd even tried joining a slimming club, Slimming World. I joined that. And I had a modicum of success with that. I lost 3 stone. But I didn't understand how the weight loss, how it actually worked, the science behind it. Because everybody then was into counting calories and low fat. And that was the trend. And round about the 80s, all the gyms started coming up and the health clubs and all this kind of stuff. So there was a lot of activity in the health industry, but not a lot, in my opinion, now as I've come on my journey, not a lot of real understanding. And people were sort of a bit faddy about what they were doing. And I went down that journey. So to answer your question again, it was because I've got older, really. You know, you all of a sudden realize you take stock of life. You know, it's like somebody who lives in a house that's untidy. They get used to it. And I just got used to it.
Okay, Treflin.
You know, it's only when somebody comes in and tidies up. You know, you go to somebody else's house and say, haven't they got a nice house? And you go home and yours is a tip. You know, but some people just can't get around to sorting it out. And I haven't got around to sorting my situation out.
Okay, this is really interesting because we are very, very similar in what we're thinking at the moment. But what would appear to be the journey to get to where we're talking today seems quite different. Now, for example, I think a lot of this depends on, obviously, your own body type, your own lifestyle, and very much the influence of people who you live with or you live your lives around. And so I'm going back now to right back to your early days in secondary school. So let me ask you, what sort of habits did you get into in those days to keep yourself fit and active? Because, you know, if you're going to look for a way to keep yourself fit and healthy, I don't look at a kid of 20 who's coming on selling me diets and training regimes, because basically I'd much rather talk to somebody of our age who's shown me how they can do what they've done during their life. So let me get to the habits that you were getting to through your lifestyle at, say, the time you were at secondary school and just about ready to leave. Were you interested in sports? Did you regularly do sports? Did you have any exercise regimes that you were involved with?
No. When I played football, my position was left outside. I was quite happy to be the linesman. When it came to rugby, I would just give them the ball. You know what I mean? I didn't want to run in and have a big act, tussle in the fight. Yeah, do you want the ball? Go on, then you can have it. And so I was never a good sportsman, really, because I wasn't interested. Because to me, I found it too violent. Seriously, you know, I enjoyed the football, kicking the ball around. But, you know, when I was in secondary school, I used to go to a school in Harlech, and I lived in Barmouth. And that was a 10-mile journey on the train. And my mum would make me a packed, it wasn't a packed lunch, but it was a box, a pack of food that I would eat on the train on the way home. So when I got home, I'd already had half of my tea, because she would have made me some sandwiches. So as well as having my dinner in school, as we call it, on the train on the way home, I'd have a nice snack, you know, two or three sandwiches and whatever. So when I got home, I'd already eaten, but then I would eat later. And my mother was always in and out of the kitchen, always making scones and cakes. And there was always food in our house. You know, we were always well fed. And every meal included a pile of bread and butter. You know, when he went to the chippy, he didn't get fish and chips. He got fish, chips and bread and butter, you know. And so I was just used to eating in that way. You know, carbohydrates, potatoes, bread, cakes, biscuits, you know, were a staple part of our daily eating plan. And as I got older, obviously, I found beer then, you know, and that didn't help.
Ah, okay. This is interesting, Treflin. Very, very interesting. Because basically, when we come on to discussing the Warrington Low Carb Group and all that sort of stuff, I go really a little bit further back to the root of the problem. Because I know when I was a kid, like a lot of people, you know, just after the war, we didn't have money for luxury items. And so I used to eat a lot of bread and treacle. But then I was off to the park to play football. I was out in the road playing games. I was always on the go. When I went to secondary school, I used to have to cycle to school 3 miles there, 3 miles. In fact, I think it was about 6 miles there, 6 miles back. When I sort of go through all my life, I've always been doing sport. Even today, even before we even start talking, I'm out of bed stretching and doing some exercises just to make sure that I keep to my regular daily regimen. It's important to me. Now, that doesn't mean to say that one is right and one is wrong, one is better or one is worse, because we have to make those value judgments for ourselves, as you well know. What I'm trying to sort of understand is how somebody like yourself has been, let me not just focus on you for one second. Let me tell you, if I go down to Benidorm and I sit on a bench on the front, I can see thousands or hundreds of Trevlins walking up and down Benidorm Promenade.
And I can traveling now or traveling was
not traveling now. You're traveling light, as Cliff used to sing. But I mean, you know, it used to be legendary that you could sit and look at the people, and you still can, walking up and down Benidorm, especially men carrying a barrel of beer in front of them. And to be honest with you, you see. You've promoted a lot of really serious thinking for me since we've met again and we've talked about what you're doing, because I've had a number of people like yourself who we've lost over the years, and a very common denominator seems to be the bariga, or the big stomach, and the beer that's gone in there, and then obviously. For people that have got older, they seem to have got a love of wine. My late sister, I mean, she drank a couple of bottles of wine a day. And quite honestly, you know, I always worried about that aspect of her health. So I think that there are more things in play than just having any specific diet. So, for example, I've never worked with counting calories, never worked that way. I've always looked at what I do, what I'm doing today, how I'm eating, and how I'm not spending enough of my energy, or, you know, that sort of way of looking at it. Now, you've got a very scientific way of looking at things. I've got a very...
I was fortunate in as much as I served an apprenticeship as an instrument mechanic, so I learned to look at things from a scientific point of view, and electronics, and, you know, my maths improved and everything. But just going back to my school days, and I'm sorry if I've cut you short.
No, not a problem.
I wasn't a sedentary child. because living in Barmouth, we had a beach and we had mountains. And so I was out every day running up the mountains, playing out with the lads. You know, I lived an active life. It just wasn't involved with sport. You know, like I said, we kick a ball around, but I was never bothered about playing football. You know, there were far better things to do, like meeting the girls that were on holiday. You know, that was my biggest hobby, really. You know.
Well, look. As I say, there's no way that I'm thinking one is better or worse. I'm thinking of how different things are. And of course, a couple of things that we did hit on, which immediately triggered a thought for me, is this business of self-image, because I was never, ever anywhere near your weights that you've experienced. I've tended to be around 12 stone. My fighting weight would have been about 11 stone. And then I, as you know, when I was working on the radio station here in Spain, I started I'd have a breakfast and then I'd stay all day with one banana. I mean, it became a joke, because the next presenter after me, Paul Freeman, used to always hate the fact that I'd had the banana in the studio. But the idea that was in my mind was I was going to eat less and therefore I wouldn't be putting any weight on. And then one particular day, just like something you told me earlier, I looked at a window and I thought, who the hell's this stalker? Looks a bit like me. And he's looking a little bit like he needs to take care of his belly. And I sort of then got a red flag went up. Something is not right. I'm putting on a bit of weight round the middle. Now, I probably wasn't doing as much walking and running and everything else at that time, because I was very busy with the radio stuff. Plus then I'd go home and do some gigs. So I probably didn't have as much time to do any training. But I still had the same feeling about who I was as you were identifying for yourself. So I then started, another red letter day came, and I was looking at some of this rubbish that you get on the internet. I mean, it's horrible, some of the stuff you see. And they were showing you a picture of halal meat and the way that that meat is prepared. And of course, it's not just any particular faith, because the Jewish meat is exactly the same, the way that it's treated. I hated the way that we treated the animals. I then saw a little video of a guy in a truck just weaving in and out of masses of little chickens, and he was happily killing them all, and then they'd all go on the conveyor belt and be beheaded, and you know, it was just horrific. And so I became really not vegetarian, but I didn't want to eat meat as much as I had, you know, been eating meat. So that was the second thing. Then, because of other people's health problems, I looked at the likes of sugar, which you identified as a real dangerous part of people's diets. So when did the sugar come into your life? When did you spot that one?
Well, I mean, I think you've asked some questions and you've said a lot of stuff there. But if I can just go back to one thing, because you talked about self-image. You know, I worked as a clown for 20 years. And so, you know, a clown is not normally always depicted as a fat person. So my size fitted in with my occupation. So I was able to justify my size mentally because of the work that I was doing. You know, so, I mean, that was one thing. And that's probably why it didn't bother me as much. And because I was busy, I wasn't as big. But coming back to sugar, I realised years ago when I looked at the Atkins diet, because that was basically just a carnivore eating plan, and I went down that road with a modicum of success. Well, I was successful, but it was not sustainable for me. And like everything that's not sustainable, you know, we stopped doing it. you know, it's, I was really, really worried about my situation in 2019, because I had a stroke in 2014, and that changed my life, that changed my work, that changed everything for me. But I realized that carbohydrates were the problem. But the problem was, and this is coming back to my question, who did this to me? You know, if you know that something isn't good for you, then you wouldn't do it. You know, you would not take a hammer and a nail and bang it into your foot. You know, nail your foot to the floor and then say, why am I walking around in circles? You wouldn't do it. It's just too stupid. But, you know, we do things. We eat food, and sugar is an addiction. Can't, you know, I am a carbohydrate addict. And as much as there's a person who's an alcoholic, I don't know the technical term for a carbohydrate addict. And so eating carbohydrates, it affects your blood sugars. And I won't go into the science of it, but that encourages you to eat more. And you eat more, and then you're on a cycle of not being able to stop. It's very difficult. And then that becomes a habit. So eating, I wasn't eating for living. I was eating for habit. And it's like smoking, it's like drinking, it's like sex, it's like drugs. You know, if we like it, you know, then we find a reason to do it. But that reason is not logical. So we, 70% of all of our decisions are based on emotions. But when we're asked to justify it, then we try and answer that with logic. You know, why did you do this? And then you think of a logical answer. Well, there isn't a logical answer because it's stupid. It's an emotional answer. But we've heard of people emotional eating. Oh, you know, I get depressed and I cheer myself up with a bar of chocolate. It's like saying, I got depressed, so I nail my foot to the floor. You know, there's no pain in eating carbohydrates. It's very, very nice. It's pleasurable, you know, but it's not good for you. And when you get to a stage where it's affecting your life and your mobility and your health, and you think, oh dear, why am I hanging off the edge of a cliff, hanging onto a twig? You're either going to say, oh, well, hey ho, this is where I am, and I'll eventually fall off. Or you say, I've got to get out of here. And that's what it was. I said, I've got to get out of here. I've got to get out of the situation. I've got to take back control. Now, if you're doing something and you have to, at the end of the day, take responsibility for that, but it doesn't make sense to you why you did it, that means that you are not in control. And I'm going to talk in here. I mean, I'm a Christian, and I believe in the spiritual realm. I've had real spiritual experiences. I've had evil, demonic experiences. And so I realized that there was a force outside of me. And if anybody's listening to this and poo-pooing it, well, they're fine. I don't care what anybody thinks. I'm telling you about, you know, what happened to me. Because as a four-year-old, I was taking biscuits to a ghost, but that's a